This is the Bloom Pod, and I'm Taylor Onion.
And I'm Melissa Lutz.
Each week, we bring you an interview with an everyday person who is chasing big dreams. I interview the guests for the first part of the show, and then Melissa and I get together and recap the main points together.
With the occasional shenanigan.
Please enjoy this week's guest. Right. I would love for you to explain to people why you're in a car. And I'm going to start us off by saying this is the first interview that we've done that the guest is in a car. So I appreciate you for bringing first to it. But Ed/Edward, we'll get into that in just a second. Yeah. But I'm going to have you, let's start things off. Share a little bit about your background. Share a little bit about the preferred name. We just talked about that a little bit offline. Let's do it.
So hello, everyone. My name is Edward Jones II. A lot of people call me Ed. We'll talk about that. I'm from Houston, Texas, specifically a city, Missouri City, Texas. Mo City, as most people know it. Look out. Grew up in Texas my whole life. Played football growing up. Actually, I was a huge basketball fan growing up. Huge basketball fan. I knew every basketball card. My dad would literally be like, hey, come in and tell us how much Michael Jordan, you know, had average in his assist for this year. And I'd be like, oh, he averaged blah, 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 blah. You know, so I was like that guy. Then I got big and I realized that you can't really physically hit people in basketball. I still kind of play noon ball. I am a big believer in the bad boys. I like to let people know that I'm on the court physically. So that doesn't work in basketball. You get fouls. So I was like, you know what? Let me try this football. My best friend across the street played football. I tried it once. I actually got knocked out, and I literally, because my brother let his friend, I didn't know football. So here I am like 10 years old running with a helmet and all the winds in my helmet. And I'm like, oh my goodness, what's that sound? And then whack. And I was like, yeah, I'm good. I'm gonna play basketball. So I tried football out in sixth grade. Actually liked it. I was good at it. I didn't know what I was doing. They just told me to tackle this guy. So I just did whatever I did to get to him, and it actually worked. I remember the first time we had a game, they're like, hey man, they're double teaming you. I was like, what does that mean? They're like, they're literally putting two people on you so they can't stop you. So played football, played all the way through high school. Unfortunately didn't have the career in high school. I had an opportunity to play football at smaller universities, but I wanted to study sports administration. I know I wanted to work in sports. Like that was from a young age. I wanted to work in sports. My family's a big real estate family, education family. And so the University of Houston, where I graduated from, they had a sports administration program. I got admitted to Baylor and Houston. We'll come back to that. I got admitted to Baylor and Houston. And University of Houston had a great sports management program, and they had it planned out. Like every other school was like, hey, you can do this and then go into the sports world. But I wanted to study sport. So University of Houston had that. So I said, you know what? Let me go to University of Houston and let me try out for the football team. Now, I did an incredible job. I will say that because there are people who I can call and say I did an incredible job on my walk-on trial. Now that I'm on a football staff, I realized that the other three guys that were trying out with me were 6'4 and higher. So being 6'1, I probably should have went over to the other side of the ball and snapped the ball, but it all worked out. I did some internships at the athletic department in a marketing office for two years. And I was sports management major with a marketing minor. And, you know, that's kind of how that went for me. Got out of school, didn't know what I was going to do. A graduate assistant position kind of fell through. I was a little frustrated with that. But, you know, that's life. Everybody has that story, obstacles. My V8 engine isn't. The bagpipe is making too much noise, huh?
I mean, I can hear it, but it's not terrible.
You still hear me?
I can still hear you. It adds a little bit of character to the podcast, I think.
Okay. Awesome. So I'll get louder. I don't want people to miss the greatness.
Right.
My Corolla's not going up. It's 65 right now. But sorry, my clicker's on. So anyway, go to school, all this, and I'm kind of like, man, what do I want to do the entire time? College, my mom was like, you should get your teaching certificate. And I'm like, and it was crazy because when I was growing up, I have a big family. I would teach my brothers and sisters during the summer, like actually like literally create curriculum, attendance sheets and reports. And it was crazy. Like, all this stuff, I literally would teach them. And the first time I got in trouble in school was for stealing books from the grade above me. So I literally learned cursive before everybody in my class, and the teacher was mad, and I got in trouble. I was like, you literally wrote me up for learning. That's a whole nother story. But anyway, so my wife, so not my wife, my mom is like, you should, you should do teaching. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I go to a church service, and this guy is kind of like, I'm in one of those cruts where I don't know what I'm doing in my life. And I'm like, ah, what's going on? Help me, God. And so he says, hey, you're going to be like a father figure to a lot of people. And so I'm like, all right, sweet. So I'm like, all right, that's probably teaching and coaching. So I go that route, get alternative certification, and I start substitute teaching. And then I start teaching high school football. I taught world geography with ninth graders and coached high school football. So I had a composite. I was a composite. My certification was a composite social studies. So I could have taught every single thing, but they kept me with freshmen for 6 years.
Gosh.
I'll come back to that. Cause now that I'm saying that, there's a reason. Okay, so I'll come back to that. Anyway, so I do that. I get the opportunity for the last 3 years of coaching high school ball to go to my alma mater. My alma mater has incredible athletes. I was not one of them, unfortunately. But that area of Missouri City, I mean, it has incredible athletes in every sport. So we had about, at the time, 14 guys in our program that were Division I players. So I got to meet a lot of staffs, meet a lot of people, football coaches. And my third year, University of Houston at just my alma mater. So I'm at my alma mater for high school, helping out recruiting. And then University of Houston, my alma mater, just won a Peach Bowl. So the guy who recruits the area says, hey, Coach Herman is on his way. And so I'm getting all these sheets ready with our guys. And I'm like, hey, coach, in our sophomore class, we got some guys that can play there. And my head coach is like, Patrick McGinnis, got to give him a shout out. My head coach is like, coach, if I were you, I'd be here to get Jones. And Tom Herman says, that's the only reason I came. And he says, hey, I want to interview you right now. And I'm like, excuse me? Like, so he interviews me and says, hey, we have this position, the director of high school relations and player development. So now I'm like, I don't care whatever it is. I just want to get on college staff because I thought I wanted to continue to coach football. So I get the job, and I'm just excited. So I'm going, once again, 10 years after I went from Hightower High School to University of Houston, I'm going from Hightower High School to University of Houston again.
Right.
So there's a lot of, like, cyclical happenings in my life, as you'll see as I continue to speak. But anyway, so I go there, and I'm really still like, man, I want to be a coach. I see myself as a college head coach in 15 years, and I'm going to just, my program's going to be great. Let me learn all this stuff about culture. Let's go. And I really start building relationships with the guys. And that's the only thing I was told to do in player development. The only thing I was told was to build relationships with guys. And then the second thing was to go out and get in the community. Those are the two things I was told. So I start building relationships with guys, and I'm enjoying that part. And I realized that a coach only has this group, but I have the entire program. And so anyway, I go through that, and we have this alumni event where we bring back all these former players. And one of these players who's very prominent has his name on our wall, his awards here, his awards there, all this stuff, comes back and he's homeless. And that messed me up because I'm like, this guy's, like, we literally have his name hanging in our building. Like, how does this happen? Now, do people make their own choices? Absolutely. But has this university, who is still using his name, done everything to help him out? Has his football program done that? And like that literally for like, I kid you not, Taylor, like for 3 days, I could not think about anything but that. And so I hung up my proverbial whistle. I wish I would have kept it and put it in a case and hang it on my wall.
Right, literally.
But like, I really dove into player development from there. And like student athlete development overall. And so that was fun. Created the Beyond the Field program, which we'll talk about. And then got an opportunity here. We got fired at Houston after a winning season. I always have to say that. We were 8-5 and got fired. That's a whole nother story. but then I was able to get picked up here in Kansas. And I enjoyed an incredible 2 seasons here of, developing the young men. And the reason why I am in a car, do you want me to say that now?
Yeah, go ahead. This is a full circle right here.
Before, there we go. The reason why I am in a car right now is because I just accepted a position to be the assistant athletic director for player development with the Baylor football team. And so it's almost like even saying that is crazy. I went from a high school coach who knew nothing about player development to being an assistant athletic director for player development. So yeah. Sorry, I talk a lot.
No, you're good.
Always cut me off.
This is
that's
a podcast.
That's kind of my backstory, everybody. That's my backstory.
Oh, this is a podcast. Like, this is for talking. So you keep going.
I would like to say, you all, I do not have a car that does noise canceling. And I would, but I had to make this. I wanted to be here for Taylor. You all, sorry if you hear my 2007 Corolla in the back, but you're going to enjoy this podcast.
Right. It gives a character. It brings a lot of character. I like it. So one of the things, and I'm excited that, you know, obviously by now it's Tuesday when the podcast comes out. So this isn't like breaking news, like the people who know needed to know that you're moving on. They know already. We covered that before we jumped on air here. Right. But what I want to kind of touch on. So, you know, you mentioned one thing that, you know, you go from being a high school coach who quote unquote knows nothing to now the position that you're in. But I think really the position that you just got, the positions that you've been in, it's kind of these like jack of all trades, right? Where you're just building upon the experience that you had, whether it was in high school, whether it was going into those marketing internships, whatever, throughout your college experience, and then jumping back in eventually to coaching and eventually into player personnel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, even with you saying that right now, and sorry if I cut out driving through these woods in Kansas. Even with you saying that right now, I didn't even think about it until I literally just said it. The reason I was with ninth graders, and a big reason why I enjoyed being with ninth graders when I finally was like, you know what? No principal is going to allow me to teach the seniors so I can focus on football. But is that I enjoyed the transition. I enjoy seeing a ninth grader go from, they're coming from middle school, they're top dogs, and so they're trying to like, this is who I am, you know, to actually see who they actually are. And I never realized that until I just talked to you right now. Like, literally, like you said, all these experiences have prepared me for what I do now.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting point too, right? Where when you're in elementary school, middle school, and I would say the jump from middle school to high school, there's more of kind of a significant, you know, than there would be from going from like, what, fifth grade into sixth grade into junior high or whatever. But there's these chunks of time that we have in life where when you're in middle school, you kind of, you move up in the ranks, you know, you build on your age, whatever. And then you get to that top dog role, like you're just talking about. And then all of a sudden the next year, you're at the bottom of the totem pole all over again. This very same thing happens to these kids when they are coming up to be seniors in high school and then going into college as freshmen all over again. And then I'm wondering, I'm thinking about this out loud right now. And I'm wondering if once we get to that phase of senior year of college and then graduating, if that happens again in 4 years or the next, you know what I mean? These kind of like different phases of life, how that kind of operates out. It's an interesting thing to think about for sure.
Absolutely. And the big thing I've learned in life is just transitioning is so important. Like right now we're transitioning as a family, like literally I'm in a car right now going to figure out stuff to transition. But I mean, it's all different. So even for professionals like ourselves, you know, like I was in Houston my entire life. And I moved to Kansas and now I have to transition to, well, first of all, I moved here in a snowstorm. So I've seen snow twice in Houston, and Houston's humidity picks the snow up. It never sticks.
Right.
I mean, it does overnight, but once the morning comes, it's gone. To like, you know, transition, like, holy smokes. Like, I have to like, and like literally stuff, like just even physical transition, like it's dry out here. So like my skin gets, cause in Houston, there's so much moisture and humidity and you come out here and it's so dry. And I'm like, what's going on with my body? Like, why, you know, just, but just like how that mentally just kind of like, you know, those transitions can mentally like kind of rock you in a sense. To your point, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah. And those are, I mean, what you just mentioned is not something that we're thinking about, right? Like going from Texas into Kansas, you're thinking like, oh, I'm going to move geographically. It's a transition for me and my family, whatever, but not anticipating the change in the air quality and how that can potentially affect your life. It's crazy.
Exactly. I found out the hard way that shoveling snow in the driveway is a workout. Like, it is an absolute workout.
That is for like, sure.
I was like, oh, it's not that bad. Then I didn't know anything about the like ice underneath.
Yep. That's a struggle. That's not something that I miss from the Midwest, being down in Tampa for sure.
There is no doubt.
So you touched on a little bit a program that you created at Houston, which was the Beyond the Field program, and you've kind of taken right. that with you wherever you've been. You've moved it into the LLC phase. So tell me a little bit about how you got started with that, why you got started with that, and really why you wanted to move it from just something that you're doing within the scope of your job to something beyond.
Right. So so it started going back to that story with the alumni who did not, was homeless. And I forgot, he's also massively overweight. So he's kind of disenfranchised both ways. That bothered me. So I did some research on how we can use football and help student athletes. Well, what happens in football is when we recruit, every staff member has to present themselves. And so my marketing background as a student, as an intern, they weren't going to say, oh, that's our director of player development, and I go up there and talk. I wanted to, okay, how can I make this a program? How can I let parents know that their son is going to be taken care of, you know? And so I'm sitting there doing names. I'm like, oh, this, oh, that, no, that didn't work. Oh, this, oh, that. And I'm like, Beyond the Field. So this is about 2017. I'm in a parking lot with this guy. And so I made the tenets of like what it is. So basically it's personal wellness, community impact, and career development. It's nothing different than most development, student athlete development programs. But I'm like, all right, how do I want to name this? Like, I want to be cool and like, you know what I'm saying? Like have a little, some swag to it, you know, like, hey, you know. So we're in the parking lot. Literally, I'm like, Beyond the Field. And I literally tell myself, I just want to be great Beyond the Field. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, and our creative director is there. He works for Major League Baseball now, Adam Cordaggi. And he's like, that sounds good. I was like, yes, Beyond the Field. That's it. And I remember like typing it in my notes. So anyway, I do that. And as I start hashtagging it, it starts picking up steam. So I start seeing our coaches like, yeah, Ed Jones and the Beyond the Field program. I'm like, okay, well, let me make pamphlets. So I start making pamphlets and stuff, because I'm going to these companies about internships and stuff, and they're giving me this. And I'm like, I need to have something. I want to hand something to them so they know, like, hey. So they're like, hey, yeah, this guy from Houston just talked to me, but I can't remember what he talked about. So we go through that phase, and then it actually starts becoming the big thing that turned it for me, though, and I did not know this, was LinkedIn. So the great Will Baggett. I don't know if you know Will Baggett.
I do. He was a guest.
Yes. So Will Baggett came to Houston, and he talked to us about how to present yourself and all this. And it was kind of crazy. And I always tell Will's like a dear friend of mine. I always tell him the story. I was told by somebody that I was not gonna come back in February. Now, all respect to them, because they told me this in June, so they gave me 6 months. So I gotta give them respect because of that. Because working in football, I've seen people get cut, like it's bad. So I give them respect for that. So I was in this funk. I was walking around there pissed off and all that. My wife was like, hey, like, you need to chill out. Like, she literally like coached me up. I walked in the house, she's like, we ain't doing this no more, you know. Like, you need to chill. You got 6 months, you know, impact their lives. God placed you here, impact their lives. So I'm like, all right, whatever. You know, I'm still kind of mad. So one of these days, after I finally calmed down, Will Baggett's in our office, and he's sharp-dressed. You know Will, sharp-dressed. I'm like, man, that's a sharp-looking brother. So they have Will talk to us, and Will talks about how you, your brand, he calls it lifts. I don't know if you ever heard it, but he says, he calls it lifts. Use LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Snapchat. So I was using Twitter, you know, a lot. I'm a Twitter pro. If anybody knows me, I like Twitter. Twitter's awesome. I don't know why Twitter is free and how Twitter is free, but it's awesome. Anyway, so he said LinkedIn, and I'm like, man, nobody cares about my, like, what we're doing off the field. I'm doing community stuff on LinkedIn. But I was like, you know what? Let me do the same content on LinkedIn. And it, like, took off. Beyond the field. Every time I put them out, Beyond the Field, boom. And, like, there were people who I reached out, like, in that kind of did this with football. They reached out to me, like, hey, man, I need to talk to you. You're doing a great job. I'm like, dude, I've been trying to, oh, my goodness. Like, yeah, thank you so much. Like, you know. And so Will kind of helped with that. So when we got to my last year in Houston, we really were setting down the program of what it was going to look like and how we're going to do things. When freshmen came in, they were going to do this. Sophomores came in, they were going to do this. and we got let go. So I had some time, so I brought it here to KU, and I'm so thankful for my experience here because I was able to, like, push it out. Like, right. The head coach, Coach Miles, was like, I said, Coach Miles is going to help us in recruiting. He's like, dude, they literally, I have not heard a no. And so Kansas, I've been able to open up my wings and let the program just grow. The reason I went to a LLC was we had a speaker named Dr. Kofi Smith, who I encouraged him to speak any student athlete development program. And you want to talk about transferable skills? He's the best speaker I've heard. He played safety for Georgia Tech. He talks about how he used his skills to become the president and CEO of Atlanta Airlines Terminal Company. And he's transitioning to another position now. I kid you not, Taylor, I was with him all day taking notes. I felt like I took a grad course. Like, I was just taking notes. Everything he said, like, he was just an incredible leader just of people. He remembered guys. Anyway, just, he's incredible. Dr. Kofi Smith, guys, you got to get him come talk to your student athletes about transferable skills. But anyway, I got a funny story. So he comes to talk to our guys. I'm taking him to the airport, and he says, and so he finally sits down with me. He says, tell me about your program. So I say, this is Beyond the Field program. I show him my PowerPoint. I talked about the vision. This is what we do. And so we're riding. It's about a 45-minute ride from, or 50-minute from Lawrence to KC's airport. And he says, for about 30 minutes, he just poured into my life encouragement. He says, you need to turn this into an LLC. He said, but you're on to something big, and you need to turn it into an LLC. And he asked me how old I was. I said, I'm 34. He said, you better, by the time you hit 40, this thing's going to blow up. So I'm like, all right. So, of course, me being me, you get this incredible advice. And you're like, you know what? Most people are like, let me go find out what an LLC is right now. 6 months later, like after my birthday, I was like, you know what? I need to go back to that. So I created the LLC out here in Kansas. Will Baggett helped walk me through that. Will Baggett is incredible. So I created the LLC. So I'm kind of sitting there on it. And I'm like, all right, I'm kind of like, well, what do I want to do? For me, I wanted to be something, because when I got, like, going back to what I told you earlier, when I got the player development job at Houston, there was nothing. I didn't have any framework, any groundwork, there was nothing. So I wanted to create a service for people like myself who got the job, or, you know, maybe a college student who got a graduate assistant position in player development. Or now I get a lot of LinkedIn requests from students in college about player development. So I wanted to create something so people could know. And that was it. That's really where I just wanted to go. All right. I just want to create, you know, whatever. All right. If people want me to consult, awesome. So I come in January, and everybody's doing the New Year's resolution like they do. January 2020. And I'm kind of sitting there, and I'm like, all right. I'm looking at my stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, my LLC. And I'm like, all right. Like, and I'm a man of faith. I'm keeping real. I don't want to over-preach, but I just have to tell my life story. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, all right, guy, like, can you kind of tell me what, you know, this LLC is going to be like? So that's kind of my deal in January. I want to know what's like, where do I go? So anyway, time goes on. Nothing happens. We get to COVID, and I do this thing called 30 for 30. So I'm just like, you know what? It's a lot of people I want to interact with. I kind of saw that I wasn't networking like I normally do. I like people. I like to network. So I said, I got time. And really, all we were doing was checking to see if the student athletes, where they were at, where they tested, who's got, you know, it really wasn't any development. You know, we were just making sure our guys were in the right places. A lot of administrative stuff with COVID. So I put out this thing called 30 for 30. And I'm like, you know what? I want to meet 30 professionals in 30 days. I think I ended up meeting like 67 in like 27 days. But anyway, a lot of people got on and they kept talking about, you know, what is Beyond the Field? What is Beyond the Field? And you know it, like, after a while, like, if you get 40 calls about the Bloom Pod, it's like, all right, like, you, like, a broken record. Like, my wife literally is walking by me, like, she literally is, like, telling my whole spiel, and I'm kind of laughing. So, but that was fun. But the thing that I got out of it was there's a lot of Division II, FCS, D3, high school, NAIA coaches that were interested. And they can't necessarily, they don't have the budget to hire a Ned Jones.
Right.
And so I was like, man, well, let me write something for them. And I've always wanted to write. And earlier in the year, I put down I want to be a writer. I've always liked to write all my essays. My mom keeps all my essays from high school. I just like to, I did poetry for a while, and I'm kind of getting back into, I think, even though I wasn't a student athlete, I think on a side of working in football, there's an aspect of, like, even when I was coaching, this is football, you know, this is who you are. And I was like, I want to get back to myself. Like, even when I played, I was a tough guy. Yeah. But also like poetry, you know, or I like classical music, whatever it may be. So I was getting back to who I am, art, you know, you know, poetry, writing, things like that. So Dr. Darren Roberts, he's like LinkedIn's number one top voice. He did this thing called Micro Wins. And basically I was like, how do I start writing? He was like, okay, just write 500 words a day. So here I am just writing 500 words a day. And it really was good for me because you know how it is. I had this program, but I had notes in this tablet, notes in this tablet, notes on this thing, you know, notes here, notes here, notes here, notes here. So I never had them all together.
Right.
And so I just start typing. I'm like, I don't know what this will look like. I start typing. Well, eventually I kind of figure out what I want to do with Beyond the Field. So to foreshadow or fast forward, I've completed writing the ebook, which is going to be out soon. In February, I want to drop it. So I finished the ebook. I'm getting it edited, or it's in the edit stage, formatted and all that, because I'm going to sell it for my website. Self-publishing, y'all should read about that. Anyway, I learned a lot. But the other aspect of the Beyond the Field, of the, when the website comes out, I'm going to have blogs and resources and free resources. There will be things that people can download, but then also want to consult. So like, for instance, there's three phases of the consulting. So there's the evaluation stage. So if, basically, if you're a high school coach, if you're in a football coach or a sport, it's not just football. I'm sorry, let me say that. It's not just football. Now, do I know football? Yes. And I'm a big person. I'm going to be an expert in my expertise. I don't want to go and say, well, this will definitely work for your volleyball program. I will tell you what worked for us, and maybe it does work for your volleyball program. But if you want to talk to me, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to give you my advice.
Right.
So there's three ways we're going to do it. So let's say any coach hits me up, or any business for that reason. So if a business, anybody hits me up, the first thing is program evaluation. So that's getting there, and I'm sending a sheet out to you to kind of come up with this thing of, I've kind of created this method actually that I took from recruiting, how we recruit, and put it into real life. Like, this is how you break down a program. It's just like reverse how you break down a recruit. And so I would give them that, and we go to strictly evaluation. Okay, this is what you want to do. I think you can do this. It looks like your program, or you know, your program looks like you guys lack in this. You guys need help with this. Boom. Okay, so they go for the evaluation stage. They say, thank you, we'll take it from here, we're good. The next phase is the enhancement stage. So from there, we go from the evaluation to enhance it. So now I'm getting back on them, and now I'm actually helping them enhance it. The third stage would be creation. So someone says, you can go evaluation stage and say, hey, look, this is awesome. I don't have the time to do it. Can you create something for me? And so that's kind of the whole aspect of it. Like, it'll be ebook and some other stuff. I'm typing up a retention plan deal right now that I think will be, it won't cost much, but I think it'd be huge for athletic departments, especially when you talk about the transfer portal. But also I think there's a big thing about, I think a thing that's overlooked in the transfer portal is the retention of staff. I think that, and it's unfortunate in college athletics, I don't think anything is wrong with money. I think money's not neither good or bad. I think that with so much big money in athletics, that not an absence, but the treatment of people is put on the back burner for wins or performance. And now we all know we have to win. Like, that's life. Like, nobody's down with that. But I'm a big believer in, you treat people well. Treat people well. That's one thing that that really struck me with my new job, talking to the head coach and Coach Aranda, and talking about, you know, just people over players.
Yeah.
And that was pretty, pretty cool. But anyway.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is that you can, like, you can treat people well and you can win at the same time. I don't know why. And you know, the world that we're living in today, it seems like those things are mutually exclusive. Like, well, I can either be nice or I can get done what I need to get done. They're not, those things can go hand in hand.
It's the craziest thing. Cause it's like, if you treat people well, I'm going to perform better if you treat me well.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I have a story. We were 0-3. My second year coaching at my alma mater, we're 0-3. Our head coach said, look, man, I don't know what we're doing, but I'm going to give you guys the weekend off. You guys can, Saturday, if you want to go scout, you go scout. Sunday, don't come in. Just be ready for Monday. Have all your stuff, however y'all want to do it, be ready for Monday. We won 7 games in a row after that.
Wow.
7.
Wow.
And so, that to me is a testament of, like, it's okay. Like, we all know, we all want to win, but if you grind people if you get things out of people, or like the big thing for me, and I know this is off the Beyond the Field deal, sorry.
No,
but
good.
Like you said, it's a podcast. So a podcast for, right. I'm a big believer in empowerment, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm the type of person, like, if I find a person who is a leader or is a credible, I'm a big believer in empowering the person. There are people that will literally, oh, they're a leader, let's squeeze everything out of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, let's pump them up, you know? Like, let's give to them. Let's give to them. Let's give them responsibility. Let's give them resources. Let's give them that rather than say, hey, they're talented. Ha, you know?
Right.
I'm just sorry. That's just me. So anyway, I don't know how that, but that's beyond the field, everybody. LLC.
Right.
The website's coming out soon. I'm trying to launch the website when I get the job, because I'm trying to say this in the most humble way possible. I think there'll be a lot of Twitter clicks when I announce the job. So the marketing aspect of me is like, you better have a website done.
Right.
So they could just click. So,
there you go. There you
but
go.
Yeah, so it should be up Monday. But this transition, hopefully I can get that done. So
awesome. I was going to end by the time the podcast comes out, then it would have been live the day before, because this is technically Tuesday. So people can go and check that out. We'll be sure to drop the link in the description.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, no, yes, you're good.
Hashtag technically Tuesday.
Right. Exactly. So tell me, you talk a lot about generational impact. And before I get into kind of the latter half, the, you know, the Bloom questions and all that good stuff, I want to know what that means to you. Why generational impact and what does that look like?
So generational impact for me is, it's something that I've seen my whole life, and not I've never been able to actually, define it. So, I'll tell the story of my father's father, and I'll kind of tell the story of my mother's father. My grandfather's, my father's father, my grandfather. I don't know why I'm saying it like some genealogy, like when he goes, my father's father. So, you know, East Texas, 1920s. I mean, you can imagine where America was at that time, especially for, you know, Black Americans. His mom, his dad in his life walked away out of his life. His mom passed away while breastfeeding his sister.
Wow.
So he goes in and he hears his sister screaming. And he had a choice to make. He saw the man in his life, which would be my great grandfather. So I don't hold anything against him. I, you know, it is what it is. But he saw a situation of a male walk out. Right.
Mm-hmm.
His mom just died. He could have easily done what he saw. What he did at 12 years old, or teenager, 12, 14, is he raised his family. His brothers and sisters call him brother. They don't call him by his name. They call him brother, which is stronger, you know, just that's stronger to me. You literally, you call me brother, which means so much, right? What he did was he made sure that every single one of his brothers and sisters went to school, learned how to read, learned how to write. If they skipped school, it didn't matter if he's 2 years older. He was disciplined, you know, and his impact, my grandfather did not know how to read or write, but he made sure that every single one of his brothers and sisters could read or write. And when you look at generational impact, that's the example for me, because he could have done so much. Now, he was not educated, but he has, I think all his kids were educated. They all graduated. He's got grandkids that are educators. You know, I work at university, whatever it may be. He's got great grandkids that are educated, and he created that impact by making one choice. That's generational impact. One choice. You make one choice. The one choice he made was to commit and to guide people and lead people to excellence in their lives. That's it. One choice. And because he made that one choice, I'm able to now every single year get around 120 young men and develop their lives. So at the end of the day, that's what generational impact looks like to me. That when he passed away in a good old age, but he was able to see great grandkids, all this, his legacy lives on. So the kids that I work with, you know, the players, student athletes I work with, they don't know anything about my grandfather, but they are impacted by a choice he made. And so that's what we tell our student athletes, is one choice, one conscious choice to change the trajectory of your life and others, and the impact that can make.
Right.
I'll talk about my grandfather and my mother's side. So he worked hard. You know, he was there. was there for my, just like my grandfather, my father's side, was there for his family. I'm actually at a stop, so I'm going to turn my car off. Okay. I'm going to play those closets so I can sell all this gear. Anyway, so he's there for his family, and he did an incredible job of, he had an incredible relationship with my mom. He would, you know, the train would come through the town, and he'd grab my mom and jump on the train, hold on to the train, and my grandmother would get like, why are you doing that? Stop doing that. Whatever it may be, right? So he treated all his, just hearing my aunts talk about my grandfather, it's incredible. Well, what happened, unfortunately, he went out to go fishing one time, and he told my mom to come with him. And she's like, no, I'm going to stay here. Well, he tragically drowned out fishing. And so I actually never saw a picture of my grandfather until I was 19 years old. Wow. From my mom's side. And it was just, you know how you hear the story, you see the picture, it's kind of like, I just like looked at it for like 30 minutes.
Right.
Now, the story he has is he took care of his daughters. And he had a lot of daughters. They were known as the Morris girls. And he made sure that they were disciplined, that they made the right choices. My mom always tells me the story of, it's going to be so old. My mom probably, if I told this, I'd probably get in trouble. They went to this party and all this, and they were supposed to go, and they bought these boots, these go-go boots. And my grandfather went to the party and got all of them out of there and made them bring their boots back. And he said, and he sat down with them and he said, choices, y'all have to make choices, right choices. And the legacy he left, my mom, I want to say all the daughters were educated or got a degree in some way. They all were higher ups in their business, that, you know, educators and teachers. And his impact was, I'm making a choice on how, and there are other stories that I probably don't know, but his choice was, I'm going to make sure I raise my daughters and my kids to make great choices. And the way they make their great choices now and continue to impact lives of others, you know?
Right.
And so that's kind of that's what we break it down to our student athletes, because generational impact sounds so, it can sound so like, oh my goodness, that's so big and that's so grand and I'm just me. And just breaking it down to, it's literally one choice, right? One choice. If your choice is to be the first, like for instance, we had one young man who was the first to graduate in his family. And we made it a big deal. Like, I was like, he was like, man, he just to see him smile. And like, I asked him, how was it, man? He's like, man, it was awesome. Cause you know, his parents went to school, but they didn't finish school. And so he made that choice. And who knows that is, that's what we're telling our guys. Generational impact is making one choice,
right,
that will impact an entire, you know, generation. It's like, yeah, a rock. If I grab one rock and go to a still lake and throw that one rock in, that one rock is going to create such a turbulence or impact or whatever you want, a wave. Like, it's going to really, it changes the atmosphere of that lake for that moment.
Right.
And so that's kind of what generation impact is too.
I like it. I like the visual tie in there of the kind of ripple effect of, you know, in that moment, this decision that you make can carry out and have an impact far beyond what you're able to reach, you know, as just one person. I love that.
Appreciate it. I might do that at my next job. We're right next to the Brazos River, so
there you go.
I'm happy to do that.
There you go. I like it. Okay, so I'm going to move into the Bloom question,
yes,
the namesake of the podcast, and you've touched a little bit on this stuff as we've gone through, but I'm gonna ask you outright right now, what is one experience or a series of experiences that you have had that you feel like have kind of helped you bloom into the person that you are today?
Ooh. That's a good one. I'll say this. Hopefully this answers the question. When I finally let go of the aspect that I didn't play college football. And so being a high school coach, you know, did you play? Did you play? Did you play? When I finally, and it was no disrespect to anybody who did play college football. But when I finally said, you know what? That was experience I didn't have, but that has nothing to do with how I can do my job, coach football, impact lives. And that literally took me to a different, like, because I was sitting there thinking like, man, well, if I went to this university, I would spend like time thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, because you want to prove yourself, like, man, I wouldn't trash, you know?
Right.
It's like, okay, like I didn't like, and I hate to be like that. Like, once again, no disrespect, but once I finally just let that go, like the growth potential in my life has just been phenomenal, to where I actually get to talk to people about how you can overcome that, I guess it would be called imposter syndrome, in a sense. So yeah, that's probably sitting here right now, transitioning to Baylor University. If I never would have got over that, I think I'd still be a high school coach.
That skill and being able to let go of things that are outside of your control, I think is, I mean, I don't want to say it's the most important skill, but as far as, you know, adaptability and kind of being able to like move on and move forward in life is vital. And I played in college, but I was a walk-on. And so it was the same thing in a completely different way of like, oh, well, either, you know, the starters or the scholarship players or whatever, like there's, in my head, there's a divide between us because I'm a walk-on. But when I'm, you know, when we're traveling places, people aren't like, oh, there's, you know, number 16, there's the walk-on. People don't know, you know what I mean? And it's like, once you get over that and once you're able to be like, oh, I was, you know, like, yeah, I didn't play as much as I wanted to or as I hoped to, but the experiences that I had prepared me for everything that I have been able to do and that I hope to do moving forward. So I think that's, I love that Bloom experience that you just said. That's awesome.
I appreciate it. It's something that, you know, it's something that we deal with student athletes. You know, you think about a guy who did play and he's not an all conference player or the guy who didn't get invited to a NFL camp. It's like, it's tough. Like that stuff is tough. But like you said, that letting go is so freeing. Yeah. It is like the growth after I let it go was just like, I mean, it's just like, whew, it was like almost like a bamboo tree. Like
you're there.
And then that one year, you're like, oh, you let go. Thanks. Appreciate it. You know?
Right. Yep. I love it. Okay, so I'm going to – the quick peel, typically I got a few questions, but we didn't get to talk about Read by Ed. So I'm going to ask you what's your favorite book? Tell, you know, give us the brief Read by Ed, and then I got one more quick peel question for you.
All right, I'll be concise because I know I talk a lot. So Read by Ed, basically, I like books. I got a ton of books at home. I like buying books. It's the weirdest thing. Like, I just like books. But I realize I'm not reading the books I'm buying. And so Read by Ed, I kind of wanted to create a space where there's some accountability to it, because it's like I have a audience and I need to create this discipline to get this audience. And so that's where it was. And because I like was randomly on road trips, when we like take road trips in football, I'll read a book and I kind of would tweet, oh, blah, 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 blah. And so for me, it was that accountability. Now I have slipped. I feel so bad because at the beginning of the year, I changed it to, it was going to be bi-weekly videos under 3 minutes and a children's book with me and my daughter once a month. But of course this transition has made it a little different. Yep. And I'm going to like have a video with my fans on Monday, but I got to get back on it. Somebody encouraged me. One of our ADs here at Kansas, I was saying goodbye. And he was like, man, you got to stay on it, man. Stay on that Read by Ed. And I'm just like, you're right. But that's really what it is. I try to make 3 minute videos about the books, keep it going. And I just think for me, it's an encouragement to our players too. It's been pretty cool.
Is there a favorite book that you've read during that process?
The favorite one I've read during the process, actually read was, Chris Guillebeau is the author. The $100 Startup was a really, really good read. It really takes you, like, all the questions you have about, oh, I want to get into entrepreneurship, but, oh, it's too big, or, oh, this is, I didn't go into this entrepreneurship program at the University of Houston, which is a really good one. He breaks it down. It's like, this is what you do. Right. And then to back off that book, he has one called Side Hustle, From Thought to Income in 27 Days. So combination of those books are the best I've read.
Okay. Now my other, I got one this or that, and then I got a fill in the blank for you to round things out here. So the this or that is Kansas barbecue or Texas barbecue?
It's Texas. It's Texas. Kansas barbecue is good. It's good. But like Texas barbecue, you don't need sauce. You don't need anything. They can put on a napkin and you'll eat it. You know, it's Texas. A lot of people won't like that, but it's Texas.
I mean, that's all right. You're from Texas. So the people who don't like it, they can.
I am so excited to sink my teeth in the brisket
next week. Right. I'm sure. Okay. So the fill in the blank is onions are blank.
Oh man. Onions are versatile. You like I literally would just buy them and throw them in so much. They're like, man, you know, like onions are versatile. And they're like, I would call them like, I don't know. It's like a sneak punch. Like, you know, you watch boxers and they like, they're all going toe-to-toe and like somebody sneaks one in and you're like, whoa, wasn't ready for that. That was awesome. That's how onions are. It's like, oh man, that took it to the next level. So yes.
I love it. I love it. That's fantastic. All right, Ed. Oh, you know what we didn't talk about is the Ed versus Edward that you shared with me. The preference. Yeah, so let's wrap it up with that.
Yeah. So like we talked about before. So my name's Edward. I've been called Ed my whole life. The two times I was called Edward before I got married was whenever I was in trouble, because my dad's name is Edward. So I knew which Edward that was. And I had a teacher who called everybody by their full name. She didn't do nicknames. I had a coach whose name was Edward. He called me Eddie. I've been called Eddie twice in life, but that's not, it's really Edward or Ed. My wife's family will not call me Ed. They won't do it. I don't know why, but they won't call me Ed. Nobody calls me Ed. My wife just now started doing that. But so I was telling Taylor before we started, I actually yesterday in my office, because at my new university, they were asking about my nameplate and they said, hey, do you want Edward or Ed? And so I kind of wanted to do some name meaning or etymology, whatever it may be. I may be wrong, but I knew Edward meant wealth protector. And if you break down, it's like Edward, it's like old English Edward, you know, and a lot of kings were named Edward. It, like the first part of Edward, Ed, or however you say it, means rich, prosperous, wealthy. And then that ward means protector, and something else. So it means like wealthy protector. Literally, Edward means wealthy protector. But I was like, well, what does Ed mean? And so Ed means rich friend. And so there's still that rich or prosperity, which is awesome. I definitely will receive that in every bank account I have. But anyway, I was telling Taylor what I'm going to, I think what I'm going to start doing is in business, so whenever I first meet people, I introduce myself as Edward. But I'm thinking about in business going by Edward, because I definitely want to be a wealth protector. But in friendships going Ed, because I want to be a rich friend to people. So that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's kind of interesting that we brought it up. I actually looked at it yesterday. So.
Right. Right. So I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we started off the podcast as Edward, and I'm going to move into saying, thank you, Ed, for joining me.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Taylor, I have enjoyed this, and hopefully I've become and will become a rich friend to you.
Yes, I hope so too. I love everything that you're doing, and thank you for taking the time today, especially through transition, literally driving the car out there trying to get stuff prepared for the move. So thank you so much for taking the time, and thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thank you so much. It was fun. You do an incredible job. I love it. Let me give a shout out to Taylor and so many people. Taylor, Tim Bryson, who I think was a guest, you know, Will Baggett. There's so many people. Risa Lovelace, I believe she was a guest.
Yep.
There's so many people that have encouraged me with Beyond the Field, because I just see you guys going, and that really is a big encouragement. Like, seriously, like I don't know how much I can literally tell you, like, what you're doing was a huge encouragement to me to keep going and get this thing started. So appreciate you and all those other incredible people who have been on, who have created.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We're going to keep creating together. That's the plan here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks again. And we'll see you next time.
No problem.
Stay tuned for the recap of this episode with my sidekick, Melissa Lutz.
Pulling up my notes.
All right. While you're doing that, I actually had a note and a new piece of information that I wanted to share with you.
I love pieces of information. Tell me.
Number one is that I was listening back to last week's episode and feeling less and less confident in my vocabulary each time we recap, because I think it was felicitous last week. And I feel like this has happened before, where I'll say a word and you're like, is that a word? But we do find,
maybe I should feel less confident in my vocabulary.
I was gonna say, we do end up finding the definition almost every time. But the true new piece of information is that my phone keeps auto-correcting the word new to nay, with the second E has like some kind of accent on it. And I have never used that word before, so I don't know why it's suddenly popping up, but I decided to look it up this morning, and it means originally called or born, and it's used especially in adding a woman's maiden name after her married name. So the example that they gave is Mary Toogood, nay Johnson.
Well, I apologize for making you feel not confident in your vocabulary. Mostly what it is just me learning new words. So
you keep me on my toes, which I always appreciate.
And I hope you know it's never that like I'm questioning you. I'm just questioning everything I know. Like, you know?
Right.
Is that a word? How have I never heard it before?
That's fair. That's totally fair.
I believe in you.
Thank you.
In your vocabulary.
Thank you. Your support means the world. Edward Jones the second. I really enjoyed his breakdown of the names Edward versus Ed and the meanings. You're nodding, but people can't hear the nod.
I know that, but I couldn't remember what he said.
I was trying to remember which one was which. I think Edward was like a protector of wealth, and then Ed was the rich friend.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be Edward?
Well, that's what he was saying. You know, in business, he'll be Edward, but in life, like as a friend, he'll be Ed.
She's like, what up? I'm Ed.
Right. We should have looked up the meanings to our names. Tay versus Taylor. Melissa versus...
I don't know that anyone would write the meaning of Melissa, but I can tell you that Melissa means honeybee.
Really?
I think in Latin or something.
I guess it would probably be Missy. That's the most common nickname for Melissa, I feel like.
It is. I went by Missy until I was in fifth grade.
Yeah. My brother's...
People still call me Miss.
My brother's fiance. Her actual name is Melissa, but I've only ever known her as Missy.
Yeah, fun facts. I think Missy's cute, but when I changed schools in fifth grade, I saw an opportunity to be a more mature version of myself, and I felt too cool for Missy.
That is fair. I don't know that I ever knew that about you.
Really?
Yeah, I'm sure I did.
You'll hear like old family friends and like family members still call me like Miss is more common than Missy, but still Missy here and there.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard people call you that, like mostly your parents or Aaron or, you know, some of our other friends that you've known for longer than me. But
true.
I didn't know that it was based on fifth grade Melissa's decision for a more mature. But I will, I'll also
use the chance to redefine myself. And now my actions didn't necessarily follow. Display a more mature version of myself, but the name set the expectations.
The name set the expectations. You seem like a Melissa to me, and that's probably because that's all I've ever known you as.
That's fair.
Yeah.
If I were named Falula, you would say the same thing.
True. Or Princess Consuela Banana Hammock.
Yes. Or Roberta. What if my name was Roberta?
Roberta Falange.
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Regina.
It's Regina.
Regina Falange.
It's Regina. Mm-hmm. I just think Roberta's a nice name.
It is.
Totally underrated.
I don't know any Robertas.
My cousin had a cat named Roberta. Mm. That's the only Roberta I know.
this is taking us on a a far away sidetrack from our recap, which is not unusual. That's...
We went from talking about Edward's name to listing Roberta's that we know.
quite the sidebar.
Yep, a little bit, but you know, not, you know, it's on par for,
yeah, it's not
for us.
It's not unusual. As the listeners should be well aware, this is the 28th episode, so we've had...
Wowzers!
We've had 28 opportunities to be unusual.
Yeah. A little odd, if you will.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The first note that I had listed was that in addition to this being the first ever car interview that the Bloom Pod has done, was that he had so much energy. And it was, at the time of the interview, such a pick-me-up. Like when we were going through it, I'm listening to him talk and literally like feeling the energy through the Zoom screen. It was great.
Yeah, that... He can talk. He is very high energy. And let me tell you, I need that this morning because As I texted you before we started this podcast, I'm going to go make coffee real quick. And then I remembered that I'm starting a new elimination diet to see what like foods I'm sensitive to, which means no caffeine. Mm. So I'm talking myself into being awake and drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely listening to Ed speak this morning really got me off on the right foot for a no caffeine day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So much energy. I also really appreciated the stories about his grandfathers, you know, when we got into generational impact and where kind of that came from and what he was talking about. He obviously, you know, he shared both sides of his grandfathers. And so that was really interesting to hear kind of a personal family history related to what he's trying to do now, both with his Beyond the Field program and in the positions that he has, which he just accepted he's like, what, 2 days into his position at Baylor. So that was really, really cool.
Yeah, super exciting. I loved the imagery of the ripple effect mm-hmm. that our choices have. And I thought it was really cool for me, at least, to think about the story he told of the previous player that really inspired this whole program was, you know, a football player that had like so many records, like such huge achievements when he was playing football, and is now like, we don't know the story of what happened between then and now that this man is, you know, experiencing homelessness and just, you know, not where you envision perhaps a super successful athlete to be. But I think what we can take away from that is like this man, no matter what happened in his life, inspired Ed to create this program that is going to have a ripple effect.
Right.
And I think that is really cool that through some one person's struggles and hardships, so many lives can be bettered and changed because of it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. The visual aspect of tossing a rock or skipping a rock or however it was that he put it, I agree, was a cool way. And I think the other thing is that probably is a reality for way more former professional athletes or former collegiate athletes than anybody is aware. I think there's this thought or idea or stereotype, however you want to put it, that once they finish their college days that, oh, of course they're going to try to go to the next level or they get a job. That's it. And that's not always the case for everybody. It's not, you know, as easy, especially if your identity is so attached to athletics, so attached to, in this case, specifically football, that you literally don't know what to do afterwards. I'm thinking about what's the movie with the character Booby Miles? Friday Night Lights.
Oh.
And he's, you know, when he tears his ACL, it messes up his knee. And before that, he has all these scholarship offers. And finally, he's realizing, like, I can't play. And he's crying on his uncle's shoulder. I can't remember the relative. I think it's his uncle. And he's like, I can't do nothing else but play football. Like, I don't know how to do anything else. And that is, I think, a real actual thought that people have. It's like, well, I've been doing this for my whole life. I know how to play football. I know how to read a playbook and read the field and all those things, but I don't know how to transfer any of those skills into the office or the workplace or whatever it may be. And it's sometimes you just need somebody like Ed to be able to point you in the right direction or say, hey, you have all these skills. This is how they transfer.
Mm-hmm. And I'd be curious your thoughts on this because you know more than I do working in the fields, but I would have to imagine that a lot of athletes have imposter syndrome going to college because it almost creates this mindset of like, I'm here because I'm athletic. I got this scholarship based on this one set of skills that I have, which almost makes it feel like, am I supposed to be in this school? Am I qualified? Am I like, can I be successful in these classes? And I think the reality of the majority of the cases is yes, you have all the tools to be successful and are definitely qualified and should be in that school. But the idea that like you were granted a scholarship based on your like physical abilities mm-hmm. can kind of make you question that.
Yeah.
And then following, you know, when college is over, it's like, okay, well, my, like you said, my identity is in my sport and my skill set related to that. Mm-hmm. And you spend so much time and effort, like, focusing on that and building that, that, like, for a lot of people, classes almost become secondary because of this imposter syndrome of, like, mm-hmm. Am I supposed to be here?
Right. Yeah. I think, I mean, being on the administrative side of it, I've had multiple conversations with multiple student athletes who, you know, are struggling in that space. And it's like, hey, if people didn't think that you could do it academically or athletically, then you wouldn't be here, plain and simple. Like, that you have been recruited on the basis of people's belief in your potential. And I mean, from a personal standpoint, when I was a student athlete, the first thing that came to mind when we're talking about imposter syndrome and being kind of, you know, judged based off your athletic abilities is for our freshman year. So there were five of us who were in the same class. Annie, who was a redshirt freshman, so she had had a year in college, but she was transferring, you know, to a new school, to a program that had maybe more expectations than where she had been before, all this and that. And then the other four of us were all freshmen at the same time, two of which were on scholarship, two of us were not at the time, one of them being myself, and I was a walk-on all 4 years. So to know that there, you know, and I'm thinking at the time, I had no idea. I'm thinking everybody else is on scholarship, that I'm the only walk-on. And so going through preseason freshman year and struggling in the way that I did, because I was used to being, you know, I'm from a town of 500 people. So when I,
you're a big fish.
When I was home, yeah, it was a big fish in a small pond. And going from that to now being, you know, a very small fish in a very large pond with people who have been playing at this level for years, was quite a shock to me. But what I didn't realize at the time, and what of course we've come to know years later as a class, is that all of us were feeling the same way. That, you know, I think Erin has mentioned before that, you know, she's coming back to her room after practice and thinking, like, what, they've got to be thinking they made a huge mistake in recruiting me. Like, I can't do this. And I'm going back to my room and I'm like, they're probably going to kick me off. I don't even, you know, I'm a walk-on, so they don't have anything to lose with me. And all of us just are going, you know, we're going to practice. We have these tough faces on and we're trying to do our best. And then we're all going separately back to our dorm rooms and just crying until the next practice. And then we would do it all over again. But none of us realized that in the moment. So I think it's like, you know, it's something that everybody goes through, and probably even if you're not in a sport, is going to school and being like, gosh, how did they let me in? This academic work is way over my head, or this campus is way too big, or whatever it may be. But I think the perils of imposter syndrome are real, and they're overwhelming at times.
And I think too, like, something about athletes is that even if you got into a school that, like, maybe academically you wouldn't, like, something that is so not unique to athletes, but really, really hard workers and are known to rise to the occasion. So even if you are got into some elite school on an athletic scholarship, like, I believe that athletes of all people will rise to the occasion and, like, figure it out and find success in what they're doing, because hard work is what, you know, hard work is how you got a scholarship,
right?
And how cool that brought you an opportunity to rise to another occasion.
Mm-hmm. I think another piece of that is people who are on the outside of it knock all the time the resources that student athletes have access to, whether it's their athletic academic advisors or tutors or whatever it may be, because they don't realize that for some student athletes, it's, you know, I mean, for me, I didn't have a tough time in high school, right? I don't think that I studied really at all. And so then getting into college and having, you know, this complete lack of knowledge on how to even prepare for a test, for, you know, anything like that. And I think there are a lot of other, I mean, this was in my town of 500 people. So I imagine, some other schools that are maybe inner city who don't have as much funding or who have, you know, just different resources at the high school level. A lot of student athletes get passed through because they have athletic abilities. And by the time you get to college, then you don't, you know, maybe you wouldn't have been accepted without athletics being there. But at the same time, the resources that student athletes need to have access to because of how grueling their schedules are is also because the system has failed them on the way up. So right. I think it's, you know, it's a, I don't even know how I want to put it, but I think to your point, athletes have an incredible work ethic. And I think in this space where obviously the work ethic you're used to putting in on the field or in the weight room or whatever it is, we don't always know at the collegiate level academically what it takes. And so being able to have a coach, academic coach, who's in, you know, advising is just as crucial and just as important to your overall success as a human being as it is to have a strength coach or a weights coach or a, I don't even, a position, you know what I mean? Like all those things are vital to the holistic development of student athletes.
Man, so true.
Thank you.
I can't relate, but oh, I did want to share a story and tell our listeners that Taylor did figure out how to study. She went very far the other end of the spectrum from not studying in high school to preparing for exams weeks in advance. Like, this girl had a study plan. If she had a paper coming up, she was working on it like months in advance. She had like a plan for every project written out. And she was like, well, today I have to achieve reading this chapter, writing the notes, and then finding sources that relate to it for my paper. What do you have to do today, Melissa? And I'm like,
It's so funny that that's the way that you remember it. Because in my head, I'm like, you know, I got to a point where I figured out what I needed to get by, and I'm all about efficiency. So, but I mean, you've said that, our other roommates have mentioned that, teammates have mentioned that, because they would be like, you know, one teammate in particular, Aaron, would be like, oh, instead of, you know, if I have 15 minutes between class, I'm taking a nap. And for me, I was like, if I have 15 minutes between class, then I'm going to finish this paper so that I can take a nap after practice and not have to stay up super late. So it was always about efficiency for me more than anything else.
Maybe it's just because I was so far in the other side of things, or like I always waited till the last minute, pulled all nighters and panicked.
Mm-hmm. And occasionally, and
maybe it's what,
occasionally you just dropped the class instead of completing the assignment.
I'm sorry, Mom. there were a couple times, there was probably two times, they were like online classes.
Yeah.
That
it didn't happen often, but it was so funny when
it happened enough that it was memorable.
Yeah.
There was one like online art class, and I was like, oh, the exam is online and I'll have the book. I'm not gonna study. Don't take my advice, listeners. Like, I'm not one to model your study habits after. But my book got back ordered. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize until like an hour before the test that it never arrived. Mm-hmm. And then I went in very blindly to this test that was like worth half of the semester's grade. Uh-huh. We had like two exams for the whole, that was our whole grade. And I was like, now where, going through my books, like, now where'd that art book go? And I was like, it never came. I was like, I'll wing it. But it was like art history stuff that like, if I didn't learn it, I wouldn't know it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it was literally in the middle of that exam that I just dropped the class.
Yep. That I think that one probably in particular, I remember, because you were like, all right, guys, I'm going to take this test. And then maybe 20, 30 minutes later, you came out and you were like, all right, guys, I dropped the class. Okay.
Also, there was something, I don't remember the details of the story, but there was like a mandatory lab that I had to go to. And this is another elective class. Like, I could, it was like one credit hour. And I wanted to go camping with my friends, and they weren't coming in back in time for the lab. So I just dropped the class.
And that is, it's a different kind of efficiency.
Yeah, I graduated. I had like a decent GPA.
Yeah.
And now come to find out no one asks you for that in job interviews.
Yeah, it's a sham.
It is.
It's just, do you have
but still work hard, kids.
Right. If you have the degree, you're pretty well good. And they say, you know, C's get degrees, which is, that's a true fact.
Also a fun fact. Did I even say this? What if there's a young child listening, looking to gain inspiration? They don't check for your degree either.
But if that's something that you lie about, I do feel like in today's day and age that they could easily catch you. In fact, for sure. Recently I was watching a TV show where someone had lied about their, what the heck was I watching? They had lied about their degree and all the involvement, like all the clubs that they had been involved in. And then they ran into somebody who was like, ah, you went here. Do you remember, is Professor so-and-so still there? And then the person was like, yes. And what a class that was, and had to, you know, make it up.
Did they get caught?
I think eventually. You know what? I think I'm meshing two things together, because I was watching a TV show that had something to do with that. And I was thinking, why didn't someone just Google this person that was set in modern times? Now, the other thing that I was watching was Catch Me If You Can, which is classic Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hanks. And he did get caught. Turns out, well, spoiler alert, I won't tell anyone in case you haven't seen it.
I actually had seen that pop up on Netflix, and I have never seen it.
Really?
So I appreciate you saving the spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also not really a movie person, so I may never watch it. But right.
Well, I was going to highly recommend it to you, but...
Okay, now I will.
You're so easily convinced.
You said highly recommend.
Yeah, well, I do highly recommend.
You're right. I'm easily convinced. Also, can we just take a moment to take a step back and listen to... here's a reminder from me to listen to Ed Jones's advice in life and ignore everything that I just said about...
What was
his... How to just get by.
Oh, and instead put in the work.
Put in the work, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I was speaking, I was like, this is not what this podcast is about.
It actually is, to be honest, because those experiences, A, helped you bloom into the person that you are today. And B, I mean, I would say that you know how to... trim the fat. Now, maybe not in your social life, because you do have a tendency to say yes to more things than you have time for. But from a business perspective, I think you are efficient. And it's probably because of your experience and your realistic
procrastinating.
Your realistic outlook of those classes. Like, I'm going to take this test and I'm going to wing it. Never mind. I'm going to drop it, because this is actually going to negatively impact me in the long run.
Yes, I learned a lesson. I learned probably that lesson a lot of times. And not the like doing minimal, but waiting till the last minute was a big lesson that impacted my life in college.
Right.
I say that, it sounds very dramatic. I ended up pulling a lot of all-nighters to like finish papers and stuff that I just waited too long to start.
You did. Part of that is because you didn't want to miss out on the fun parts of college. Mm-hmm. And
I really had fun.
Yeah. And now that's my point. Looking back, you don't look back at it and think like, oh man, I should have spent more time working on those papers ahead of time. Like, you're looking back fondly on your college experience.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a great time. Yeah. I got good grades.
Yeah.
And here I am.
You made it. And here you are, an entrepreneur.
Wow.
Freshly 30.
Freshly 30. but this did bring me back to something that Edward said about like identity, and his advice was about like, I don't remember exactly what his advice word for word was, but it was about not like finding identity in one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to glean from something from it, that would say he mentioned that like it took him a long time to get over the fact that he wasn't going to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for me, like, I saw something on Instagram this morning. I'll admit it. I was going to try and make it this like eloquent quote of thoughts that I had come up with on my own, but it was something to the effect of just like, you are enough. You are enough today. You were enough yesterday. No matter what you do today, no matter what you accomplish, you were enough and you've always been enough. And I think I love that idea because like we were just brought into this world being enough based on, I don't know what it's based on, but
based on like birth.
Based on birth and your existence, right. You are enough.
Yeah.
But if we can go into each day with that mindset and just be like, whatever I do today will just enhance that. And I don't need to worry about like whether or not I'm doing enough. My identity is found in the things that I'm doing. Like I am okay with who I am and I can just enhance that.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it.
I like it too. I'm going to say that your brain drew, I mean, you said that you wanted to make it an eloquent thing, but your brain drew a connection between what you saw on Instagram and the interview. So you did. You're eloquent.
Oh, eloquent.
Eloquent in a different way than perhaps you intended.
Why, shucks, Taylor. I appreciate that.
You are welcome. The only other note that I have before you sign us off here, buddy, was I really got a good kick out of the go-go boots story that he shared about his grandfathers who had showed up and was like, take those boots off and go home and also take them back.
Yeah, that was a good story. Yeah. A note that I had is not necessarily anything that he explicitly said, but things that I kind of gleaned from everything that he was saying. And that is the importance to just write things down and to not wait. I got locked out of my phone. Now I got to go back to my notes.
But you already took his advice because you wrote it down.
Wow. Look at that. Okay. Figuring it out as we go and letting passion be our driving force and writing everything down. He didn't say that was his advice, but I would say from his story and everything that he talked about, like going from being working in a high school setting to a collegiate setting.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like he was like, this is a pretty big jump and I didn't really feel prepared. But I love the idea of just like jumping in.
Yeah.
And figuring it out and knowing that you can, again, rise to the occasion if you're passionate about it, and just knowing that, like, if you care enough, you'll make it work and you'll be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But then also just, like, writing everything down as you go. I don't know what he said that made me think of that. It was, like, a very offhand comment, but something that I'm learning in my own life is the importance of, like, sitting with my thoughts and putting a pen to paper and like where that could take you.
Mm-hmm.
In your growth and your journey. And I just wanted to make mention of that.
I think the art of self-reflection and this this concept of just do it, whether you're ready or not, just do it, has been a very consistent theme amongst our guests, which I like to
see. Yeah. It's because you're inviting a lot of go-getters and entrepreneurs and people with big ideas on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Doing their damnedest to make those dreams a reality.
Wow, that sounds familiar, Taylor.
No, I just thought of it now.
On the spot, on the fly.
Or something.
You did think of it initially, though.
I did, yes, just not here.
You're just referencing your own previous thoughts.
Right.
And aren't we always all doing that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I think we are. All right, buddy. Oh, shall we sign this thing off?
Yeah, I'll take it away. Right. Confidently this time.
Right.
And that's the way the onion peels.
Thanks for joining us. We have another fabulous guest joining us next week that brings bloom to a whole new light. Very excited for next week's guest. In the meantime, like, rate, review. Go let us know how things are going on Apple Podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. We'll see you next time.